Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, the Western Derby, who comes in for West Coast and Frio? Did the AFL get the floating fixture right? And Jack Higgins, was it a throw or goal of the year?
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh!
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello everybody. Tuesday, that means it's time for this week's first edition of the Duff and Quarters podcast. We're brought to you by Tab Touch. And Glenn.
Duff.
After the events of Sunday.
Yes.
And your subsequent celebrations. If I hear Happy Team at Hawthorn one more time, the people I need you to think of are Dale Kickett and Phil Reed circa 2000.
We were a pretty subdued lot,
it's relevant derby.
Well, Duff,
approaching.
The game was won at quarter time, so I mean,
the game was won at the 10-minute mark of the first
actually,
quarter.
Probably was. You're quite right. Top bit of Tom Mitchell brilliance. Tell me, it would be a travesty if he did not walk home in the Brownlow this year. Given the year he's had.
We've seen upsets before, but yeah. I would think he's going to poll about...
He'd have to be 10 clear.
I think he's going to poll about 30, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he just keeps producing. So that was one for the ages on Sunday. It was a terrific game from Tom Mitchell. Set it up.
Yeah, and like his work out of the centre square in the first 15 minutes was just amazing. And really set the tone for the game, set Fremantle back on their heels. And Fremantle... I describe them quarters as like the girl with the curl. When they're good, they're very good. Mm. And when they're bad, they're awful.
Yeah, they were awful on Sunday. And you know what? You couldn't blame a few of the Freo fans for nicking off early. Really intrigued around the whole Tom Mitchell, should we or shouldn't we tag him? And I know your thoughts, and they were reverberating with me on Sunday when Banfield didn't go to him early,
yeah.
In that Ross Lyon tends to tag players who are gettable.
Yeah.
So the question around Tom Mitchell is he's going to 20 possessions are just guaranteed, and they're the ones he gets in tight, you know, not necessarily the ones you can do anything as a tagger. So it was really interesting to see how they played him and how other teams are playing him.
The other interesting thing, I think, is how much better Hawthorn are when Sean Burgoyne's playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably the one player who, I mean, obviously without Mitchell or an O'Meara or even an Isaac Smith, you can see a clear difference. But Burgoyne comes in and just gives him that Silk, as his nickname would suggest, but also the steadiness across halfback. There's just far less panic when he's there.
Okay, now you've got some news on the Tom Lynch front. We're talking about Gold Coast Tom Lynch.
Well, just secured a second meeting with Collingwood, whatever
that
means.
What does that mean?
I don't really know. He's just having a, let's just put it as it is. He's having, that's just social media speak. He's having a second meeting with Collingwood. I think it's a two-way race now between Richmond and Collingwood for Lynch, and this just means that Collingwood's a little advanced. But I think Richmond have got they're right in there.
So this is great for us. Like every time he has a meeting with someone, you know, we write a story and it fills column centimetres and it fills up airtime and all that stuff. At what point is Tom Lynch being disrespectful to the Gold Coast Football Club?
Well, already is, I think. But I'm not sure how he's going. Is he going to play again? I wouldn't have thought so this year.
He's not.
I think it's already got to the point where it probably did several weeks ago. And we're past the point now where we're not the game that announces in season whether we're moving on or not. We're past that point.
Well, I mean, why... If you think about why they didn't do this in the past, it was out of respect to their football club.
That's right.
The football club,
but we're past that point now with the way the game is, the trading that takes place on both sides, from players and from clubs. We're past it. And if it's this obvious, he'd be 1,000 to 1 to stay at Gold Coast now.
Not even that.
Yep. So I think, yes, I think his management and Tom need to come out and say, look, we've made an agreement to leave.
We don't know where we're going.
That's right.
But that is the only decision yet to be made.
Yep.
We are going. It's a matter of where we are going.
And then at least everybody can move on and Gold Coast can move on in the public's eye too. No doubt they have behind the scenes.
My understanding is that they already have. They've already conceded. I just think this thing needs to be made public. And I think Tom Lynch needs to come out and say, out of respect for the Gold Coast Football Club, I am going to be leaving. And the only decision I have to make is where I'm going.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
What did you like out of the weekend, Quarters?
look, I like North's game. I'm not prepared to. I think it was the an aberration of sorts for West Coast. I've had some fears for them travelling down there to Hobart. It's just the sort of game where we knew that a loss wouldn't be devastating. When Kennedy and Chewy were ruled out, I thought, oh, I've got this tip wrong. They're really good North in that midfield, but they do play that ground well. It's a different shaped ground, which is not necessarily going to aid the way West Coast is playing this year. So it's a much long, skinny ground, isn't it, Hobart? So I'm prepared to just put a line through that game and say, right, let's move on to this week. But I really did like what I saw from North, and I was really pleased with the game of Ahern. I think he's had two Ricos, and I like those stories. I really do. And on that, I guess on the opposite side of the scale, I was really devastated for Scharenberg, who's had a. We now know he's having his third knee reconstruction for Collingwood, and has had a really good year. And I know that we were all, you know, we all joke about how much we hate Collingwood, but I think we're all really pleased to see him, such a talented youngster, had all his setbacks, make his way back into the side and played some pretty good footy this year.
Yep.
And for me, that's just another telling blow for them in that back line, which has just been devastated. And I just really doubt now whether they can really mount a challenge in September.
So one too many, that is.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's probably two or three too many. But this is just, you know, it's become a bit of a joke. It's not funny, but I just don't think they can possibly challenge with the numbers they've got back there.
Amazing the... Once you do a couple, it's amazing how innocuous the action can be that actually brings you undone, isn't it? Like, we tend to think of knee traumas as traumas. You know, like I think of the Chris Mayne wearing one back at Geelong all those years ago, which was, the surgeons described it as a bit like a car crash injury, sort of like a pack coming down.
I remember Tony Hall playing for South Australia against Victoria once, and his leg got stuck in the mud in the goal screw at the MCG. And I think it was his... A Hawthorn teammate who tackled him. I'm not sure who it was from memory, but and that was like it snapped the other. Oh, it was horrible, and that was it cost him a couple of years, that injury.
But we look at Nick Natanui, you know, just a landing off what was not even a high jump.
Yeah,
we look at Scharenberg on the weekend. I remember, you know, training footage of Anthony Morabito doing either his second or third, and it was just a change of direction at training.
It's really agonising as a supporter and I guess even in the media when you're following these players all the time and you watch players who've come back from ACLs and your heart's in your mouth half the time with these guys.
Yeah, no, that's right.
It really is. You just hope. It's a real shame. Look, the other things I like, obviously love the Richmond-Collingwood game, and when it was three-quarter time and it was close, I thought, okay, five goals, Tigers win by now. Yeah. It was just that easy for me to pick from that point. And I liked it, and I like the way Essendon's mounting something. Sydney was gettable, but that was a pretty good finish by Essendon, building up to what's a pretty special game. Back to the old days, Essendon Hawthorn this week.
Oh, line in the sand.
Yeah, I don't think it's got to that yet, but I think things have mellowed a little bit between the two clubs since then. But we don't like each other still, put it that way.
Yeah, no, I think there's a bit of line in the sand about it still.
Quarters. And who do you know anyone who picked Gold Coast to beat Carlton? Carlton to beat Gold Coast, I should say.
About as many as pick Gold Coast to beat Sydney.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but you know what? A game like that does have its element of danger, doesn't it? One team that's been low has a big high, and the other team that's been low all year and is sniffing a win.
Well, you could see Jew's comments are post-game in that, you know, that you blokes, how many of you actually did enough to win, approach this game to win this game? Because they were still clearly celebrating.
Yeah.
The other two things, I think Tom Hawkins, 7 goals, 2 weeks in a row.
Career best form, yeah. I reckon, quarters.
Yeah, I think we forget some of his earlier form when we say that. But look, it's up there. It's certainly up there and is going to help them build towards into September. And the other thing I think the AFL realised, Western Bulldogs game in Ballarat, the starting time is just a horrible decision and they won't be doing that again. I think they've conceded that already. This time of year, starting a little bit later in the day, it was just dark and cold early.
I'm going to throw one to you, and I know you're a Victorian and a proud Victorian. Should we be going to Ballarat in season?
Probably not. Probably not. We should be going, certainly going pre-season with things like
this. Absolutely.
But, yeah, no, I'm not 100% on it. No, I don't see why. We've got beautiful grounds in which they can play in. So, yeah, I would agree with that.
Play a couple there. I would rather they played a couple there in the pre-season. And I'd rather they, you know, they tend to have this will go anywhere thing in the preseason, and then, you know, if you pay enough money, you can get a club to go there in the season.
The only caveat I'll put on it is I don't mind the China experiment. I don't mind a little bit of that. But I think Ballarat, I'm not sure what we're trying to expand the game into Ballarat, whether that's going to achieve a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of like preaching to the converted, really, isn't it?
It is.
In 5 degrees and
well,
hail.
I think it might have been even 3 at one point. So.
And half darkness.
Well, it was half darkness. So I think in the AFL, to their credit, they've said, yeah, look, we got that. We'll put our hands up there. That was just, even the locals apparently were saying, hey, how come we're here now and at this time? Apparently, even they were a bit shocked.
Yeah, no, that's sort of like, if you're going to go to Ballarat, you might as well go in round one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
You're going to get good weather.
Yeah.
You're probably going to get a good crowd. If you're going to go there, you might as well go in round one. And you can still play, the Western Bulldogs can still play a game in the depths of winter under the roof at Etihad.
That's right. Exactly.
So, it's a pretty strange call. Really.
Now, the other thing, talking about hearts in mouths, I know you and I both picked Melbourne to beat Adelaide.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts and feelings in that last quarter?
I was fascinated.
Same.
I was absolutely fascinated because I wanted to see how they were going to handle it. And I reckon quarters, that was a pivotal moment, not just in Melbourne's season. That was a pivotal moment in the Melbourne Football Club's history. I reckon.
Yeah, but well, because they've been so starved of success for such a long time, and this has been, they're an almost football team at the moment.
Yeah.
And they had to win that one, and they're going to have to win a few more, by the way, to convince us all. But I still, in that last quarter, saw not enough Melbourne players goal side of their opponents, which worried me. And I don't know whether that's laziness, we're far enough ahead, we're going to win, or just or fitness. I'm just not sure what it was.
I think it's composure. I really do. I think that what I saw in the last quarter was not a lack of effort. I just saw a lack of composure, really. And I think while Jordan Lewis didn't have the greatest last quarter, his ability to slot those two goals from 50 on the run.
It was a great time to do it too in his 300th game.
Yeah, and the other one was Clayton Oliver. And this is an interesting juxtaposition, I reckon, with these two players.
Yep.
Jordan Lewis has played in 4 Hawthorn premierships. He knows success. He understands the requirements of it.
Yep.
Clayton Oliver's only just started playing. He's played in 53 games and he's won 30 of them. So he doesn't understand this whole culture of failure. As far as Clayton Oliver is concerned, when Melbourne takes the field, they're more likely to win than lose.
I see he's also taken Jordan Lewis's lead and given up the grog for the rest of the year, as a few of his teammates have. Not saying it's the panacea, but sometimes it doesn't hurt. A little sacrifice like that, I think. Sometimes it actually can make a bit of a difference, just even in your psyche.
I think it sends a message not only to yourself about how much it means, but also it sends a message to your teammates. This is what I am prepared to do. To go that extra yard.
The absolute polar opposite of Kevin Bartlett, Clayton Oliver, has had more handballs at this stage of his career than Greg Williams had. He just loves to handball and he's pretty good at it.
He's been big in the last 2 weeks. Obviously, they didn't get the chockies against Geelong the previous week, but he was a standout for them again on the weekend.
Just on handballs, I just want to throw a stat at you that I found fascinating over the weekend. Richmond... 519 metres gained with the handball. To stop Richmond, you've got to stop that last handball because we know how good they are with it and it is such a weapon for them. But if you could somehow stop that last handball, that's pretty well it. It's just bloody hard to do.
So a lot of clubs believe the forward handball is dangerous now because the other team is pressing up. They're
going against the trend, Richmond, really, in many ways.
They just do it with numbers, don't they?
Yep.
Like, there's this surge mentality and there's always an option to give the handball. Even if the player coming at you is putting you under pressure and closing down space, there's always another player to give the handball to. It's a fascinating style of play, and it's a style of play that it must have taken a long time to hone, I reckon. So, okay, quarters, let's put your rules cap on.
Okay, I know where you're going with this one. It was, look.
Jack Higgins.
The more I've looked at it, the more, at the time I thought that's not a throw. There's not much hand movement. But really, when you look back on it, it probably is a throw. But I'm glad they got it wrong. I'm liking a lot of people saying that. I know that sounds a bit, okay,
I'm in the dark here. Have the rule makers come out and said...
I have not heard them come out and say anything about it yet.
So to me...
But coaches have. Chris Scott, it was a throw, to his opinion. I think Alan Richardson said the same thing, but they were both of the mind that I'm glad they allowed it. I mean, it was...
Isn't it only a throw when the ball hits the ground before it hits your boot?
That's the
standard for... whether you've had a legal or an illegal disposal.
So if it's in flight or in play and you're jumping up with it and you tap it in the air and come around the other side, you could be right, Duff.
We've seen players kick goals, right, laying on the flat of their back and they basically throw the ball in the air and swing their boot at it. And no one questions the legality of those goals, even though they are technically throwing the ball.
I guess that's because it's in the one motion. This was like a couple of motions. I guess it was wrapped around the post. You know what? However you play it, it was not only a great execution, but brilliant thought process behind it. In my opinion, I just the guy had the wherewithal to take. I think he's a pretty special kid, and I love the reaction to it as well, and him explaining it afterwards. And I'm at the G, full of people. Why not? You know,
there's probably no thought process really.
I don't know.
It's just pure instinct.
I don't know about that, mate. I reckon it looked to me like he knew exactly what he was doing.
I reckon that some players have the ability to be thoughtful instinctively.
Yeah, okay.
And some players don't.
I'll wear
have
that one. Yeah, well, that's him. Because, look, it was a terrific highlight. I would have been a pretty game umpire to pay it a throw at the time, I reckon.
Well,
88,000.
He would be leaving.
40 on him. Whose home game was it?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
There was a lot of both of them there, wasn't there?
Yeah, no, it was very special. Now the fixture, the floating fixture, as they call it. So around 23, we've got our games. We've got the Eagles going to Brisbane on the Sunday, which I think they're pretty happy about.
Well, you want the. This is the thing about the floating fixture. Now that we have the bye between round 23,
why do you need it?
Why do we need a floating fixture?
We don't. Well, it's more about.
It's another thing for the AFL to release. To get in,
well, probably.
To get in the newspapers and on the TV bulletins.
Well, I think it was Robbo was saying on 360, it's a TV fixture, not a floating fixture.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've got the Dockers playing Collingwood on the Saturday, yep. Day game, and I think with the fact they have to travel to the Gabba, it's not a bad thing that it's on a Sunday. So, and then you've got the week off anyway, so... You know, I don't think the recovery is going to be is an issue at all.
And I think if you look at the buys and who plays well off the bye and who doesn't, if you get to a stage where you're at 15 days, that's too long.
Yeah.
14 days is longish. 13 days, okay. When you get down to 10 days, that's almost the ideal break. It's enough, more than enough time for players to recover physically.
Yep.
And not enough time for them to go rusty on you. So
yeah. It's going to be, I think everyone trying to pick Richmond apart is going to be the most fascinating aspect of this year's final series, and who does it best.
So we've seen West Coast beat them convincingly over here by about 8 goals.
Yeah, look, West Coast still in it up to their eyeballs. They've finished top two. Interesting run. Freo home, Port away, Melbourne at home the next 3 weeks. That's, you would think they could get two of those done. Port away will be interesting, but I don't discount them from that either.
No.
And, I reckon they'll put that one in the bin from the weekend and just move on. And, look, it doesn't look like Kennedy's back, but certainly Shuey should be back. So I think they'll finish top two, and I think that's the position you want to be in.
Yeah, either one or two from WA.
Oh, exactly.
That is your absolute best chance.
Two home finals, so.
Bare minimum top four. Like, if you're not top four from Western Australia, your chances of winning it are really slim, because those three Trans-Nullarbor trips, one of them's going to get you.
And I think I think you're just somewhat diminished if you're not top two. I think the top two is the real key to it because of the two home finals. I think that's essential. Let's hope they're very high, because we want them going deep. And of course, GWS, Cameron back this week, but in his absence, they found a little, the blimp, Himmelberg.
Himmelberg, the blimp. Very good, very good. I always liked Harry Himmelberg as a player.
Yeah.
I love guys who are not necessarily overly tall, but tall enough to compete in the air and robust, and I think he's both of those things, and he goes after it on the ground. So,
sometimes with crisis comes opportunity, and that was him at, with Jeremy in Jeremy Cameron's absence, and they've done very well. They're building through the midfield, and, you know, not a lot to like about GWS at the moment.
Well, don't forget, Himmelberg kicked four goals in the preliminary final last year. This is a guy that's, you know, he's not Johnny come lately here. He can
form
play.
In a big final, exactly.
So that's very good. Yeah, I thought they were a bit scratchy against St Kilda, but they did enough to get it done, and they stay well and truly in the race for the top four.
I reckon it's a game they knew they were going to bank, and it was probably one of those games where they might kept a bit in the holster.
Well, I think they probably got a reminder from Leon Cameron at halftime. You have won games because you've done dot, 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 and dot. And so far today, you haven't done dot, 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 and dot. So get out there and do it. And for 20 minutes or so in that third quarter, they put a gap in the game, and then they really just rolled home after that. So well done, GWS.
Where do you see Port at the moment? I find them a real asterisk team. I'm just not sure where to rank them.
I can't have them. I can have them in my top six, but I can't have them in my top four.
Yeah.
I just worry about their connection between what is a very good midfield, clearly, and what is a very good forward line. And I'm just wondering why they don't score more.
Mm.
You know, I thought Charlie Dixon was enormous on the weekend.
Yeah, five goals in those conditions.
No, mate. He probably thought, you know, like he's very much a red wine steak sort of guy, which is very good winter comfort food. Yeah. Sorry, he was probably like he was whetting his appetite for what he was going to have after the game. Yeah, mate, I reckon
perhaps some good eateries in Ballarat.
Yeah, I bet. What smorgies?
No, there's some good eateries. I think my mate's got a pizza joint there. Actually,
oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, Tony's Pizzas.
No free plugs on this show. Thank you very much, Glenn Quartermain. All right, so the Derby quarters. Let's get a couple of things. If you're Fremantle and Harley Bennell comes up okay after the weekend, does he play?
I don't think they're going to play him. That's the gut feel I have.
Yeah.
But I think the gut feel is that Tabana will. Now, I'm told, and you've probably seen him down at the club, no doubt you have, he's put a lot on. I mean, he wasn't small before, but he has built even more in his absence. He's been working hard in the gym.
Yeah, He's a big bloke.
But
I saw him run around last week, and it was the first time I've seen him back on the track. I was down there on Wednesday. Look, he's a big bloke, Matt Tabana. He was a big bloke when he hurt his foot.
And he was in some good form when he hit his foot. I would bring him back in. I think what we saw at the weekend, they're definitely in need of someone of his ilk down there.
Yeah.
But I'm just not sure. I just don't get the feeling that... I get the feeling that Harley's going to have to really earn his spot back, and some might argue, well, he has for 3 or 4 weeks now, but maybe one more.
I don't think Ross was of the opinion that Harley was going as well as because everybody else was looking for a sign that he was ready to play.
Yep.
And I think Ross was looking for a sign that Harley Bennell was somewhere near his best.
Yep.
And I think that there's just a couple of things that have come back to me sort of through the cracks in the club is that Ross wanted a better performance out of Harley. I think he got that on the weekend. But then is one enough? Do you need two? Do you need three? I don't know. If it was me, I think it's time for Harley Bennell to play. But I do tend to agree with you. I think that he may play against Carlton in a week or so's time rather than in this game.
And good to see the end of the Glendening Allen Medal saga. So the Glendening medalists will be awarded them retrospectively, the chosen 12. And there will be a Glendening Allen Medal from this point onwards, which I don't think either of us disagree with.
No, I think it's fine. We all had our say about how it was achieved. And that wasn't great. I think West Coast are a bit miffed about the fact that it was achieved at all. But yep. I think Fremantle is entitled to have a Fremantle name on the medal. It was just a matter of going about it the right way. But we're there now, so let's get on with it.
Exactly.
And Ross, of course, will be presenting
being
this
an Eagles home game, yes.
And I suspect he'll be presenting to an Eagles player because I suspect it will be an Eagles victory.
I would be suspecting the same as you, Duff.
All right, well, we'll be back on Thursday. We'll have tips for you. How'd you go, by the way?
Six.
I don't reckon I got six. I think it was
It was a frustrating weekend. Geez, I worked hard for the Melbourne win. I worked very hard for that. You reckon the Melbourne blokes were tired? should have seen me in my desk in the seat. I was exhausted, mate. Getting that win over the line, I'll tell you, that was hard work.
Yeah, well, well done to the D's, because I think moments like that are big moments. Like, a club like Melbourne has to prove to itself, doesn't it, on a quarter-by-quarter basis, that it can get it done. And I think that was a... that was a big moment. I suspect they'll go on and play finals now.
Oh, year. They're playing. I think they're playing finals now.
That's what we said this time.
Please
last
let
year.
It happen. I mean, I couldn't bear it. Serious. Oh, Melbourne supporters just perpetually walk around shaking their heads.
Or their snowmobiles.
Yeah, waiting for what's around the next corner.
All right, we'll be back on Thursday. We'll have all the tips for the round. Hopefully I'm going to tip better than I did last week. Otherwise, I'm no use to you whatsoever. We'll talk to you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.